Hello, and welcome to Prose, Poetry, and Purpose. I'm your host, Marge Twisdale, and my goal today is to inspire you. This is my goal every Tuesday here on Voice of Vashon, 101.9 FM, and also on my podcast at marchtwisdale.com. PP&P is about amazing people who take the time to share what fascinates them. When you get past all the glory and mystery of what it means to be a published writer, what you find is people simply sharing their passion forward. Jeff, thank you very much for coming in and talking with me today.
Yeah, thanks for having me here.
We have this really interesting collection of things that we're going to talk about. Mm-hmm. They're all interrelated, but I like to make sure that our listeners sort of have a sense of where we're going. What you mentioned was that the information you have gained and that you share and that you offer out and support forward, as you put it, it's complementary to the existing world of what a lot of people would call allopathic or mainstream medical world. Is that a good way to put it?
Yeah, I think that's a great way to put it. We are not trying to share mindfulness, coherence, and controlled breathing to take place of modern medicine. We're using it to enhance the receivership of the patient and family. And we also teach classes for the nurses and doctors as well, so that they can help control their own emotions as they come in and out of the room, because that has an effect on the patient as well.
Right, right. Absolutely. Okay, so your name is Jeff Granville, and your daughter is Logan, and your son
is McCoy.
How do you spell that? I've been thinking about Star Trek.
Yeah, it's M-A-K-O-Y.
M-A-K-O-Y.
Yeah.
All right. How did you choose that name? It's an interesting one.
Well, we like the name McCoy, but we didn't want to go with the traditional last name spelling.
Yeah.
M-C, capital C.
Yeah.
And it still means the real thing. And his middle name is Leo, so he's the real lion.
All right. It is interesting, I have to say, that McCoy also, wasn't that the doctor in Star Trek?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So the medical world was just sort of meant to be for you guys.
I guess so.
Look at that as a positive. Yeah. So you are here with me today because life led you from what you thought it was going to be like down a very interesting path. You were showing me some photos a few minutes ago, and I can, as a parent, I can empathize and, but only imagine really what it must have been like, what you and your family have gone through. So why don't you briefly give everyone a sense of the actual experience, you know, the family experience, and then we'll get into how you guys chose to respond to this event. So there's a medical event. Tell everyone about it and get them on board.
Right. Well, McCoy and Logan and their mom had gotten sick and didn't go to the doctor. And then on a Saturday, they decided to go to the ER. Okay. And it was just before Christmas. And I was due to get them Christmas morning for the remainder of school break.
Right.
And the doctor in Colville had said that, well, I think he's got the local flu, but it's too late to administer antibiotics. And his face was really swollen.
Right.
So they said, here, just get some Benadryl and give it to him for the swelling. Which fortunately they didn't do, because it was the swelling that led us to know that something else was wrong.
Right.
So when I got him Christmas morning, we did our normal Christmas stuff. And a few days later, we decided to take a trip to my mom's in Anacortes. We got to my mom's house in the middle of the night, and I carried him in and laid him down. And we were bed sharing because we're taking a spare room at my mom's house.
Sure.
And I noticed that when he laid on his back, he was really laboring to breathe. He was having a real hard time breathing. And he was really rapid, shallow breaths.
Sure.
But he didn't have a temperature. And so in the morning, I decided to take him to the doctor. And it turns out that on that day, the 29th of December, was the only day between Christmas and New Year's that he was coming into the office.
And
he happened to be there, which was very fortuitous, because we went in and he looked him over and he agreed, there's really nothing out of the ordinary that I can see. But when I described that he was having trouble breathing and really shallow, rapid breaths when he was laying on his back.
Right.
He said, well, we could push for an x-ray and see if the insurance covers it. So we waited around for about an hour and they wouldn't cover it. So I said, well, let's just do it, you know, a couple hundred bucks, who cares?
Right.
And they got the image back and it looked like he had double pneumonia. So he prescribed some antibiotics and we went back to my mom's and had dinner. Mm. And then after dinner, we got a phone call from the doctor that said, well, said the radiologist looked at the films and he said it is not double pneumonia. He has a chest mass and he needs a CT. And if we can't get one ordered here, you need to take him to Seattle Children's tomorrow morning. Mm-hmm. And I took McCoy and we went into the emergency room at noon on December 30th.
And that was you have the healthy picture.
Yeah.
And then you have the starting to look swollen enough that you're nervous about it picture.
Yeah.
And so that's what he looked like as you were leaving your mother's house and heading down to Seattle.
Yeah. Yeah. His face was swollen. And
it wasn't screaming terrifying. And then you have the next picture 24 hours later.
Yeah. 24 hours later.
Unbelievable.
He was completely, his eyes swollen shut and unrecognizable, really.
I mean, his face looks like twice its normal size.
Yes. And his chest was literally twice as
I could see
size.
It bulging in that third photo.
Yes. Jeez. Yeah. So within an hour, they had done a lab draw and sent it out. And a doctor came in by about 1 o'clock and pulled me outside the door and said that McCoy's white blood cell count was over 300,000.
What is it supposed to be?
Down around 30,000.
Okay then.
Yeah. I mean, it can range, but that's about the norm. So it was 10 times the elevated amount. And he said he either has leukemia or lymphoma. And
they didn't even know yet about all the masses everywhere. They hadn't actually visually seen them yet. This was based on the blood work.
They had already seen them. They did the lab draw there at the hospital.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And the CT scan.
Yes.
Got it.
Yes. They actually did the CT scan later after the lab draw and given me the diagnosis. So I returned back to the room and here I am. I'm pretty big, strong guy, and I've run boatyards and been able to fix most anything mechanical, and I too have a fear of hospitals and needles, and I don't understand the language, even though I have two older daughters that are in the medical business.
Mm-hmm.
So I just did what anybody would do, just ask God why us, why this perfect little boy, and do I even believe in a God that would do this to an innocent child, you know? And right then, McCoy gasped for a breath, and I fell to my knees at his bedside, and I realized I was given everything I needed to help him the most, and that was just to be with him.
Mm-hmm.
His eyes were swollen shut, and all he had was the images inside his head, and I knew that the only thing I could do and what I needed to do was to be present and be with him, and that ended up being
the key,
the main key to his survival.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow. You know, it's funny. I was telling that story earlier during our pre-chat, and it surprised me that I actually felt emotional about something that happened so long ago.
Mm-hmm.
And you were talking about the soma and the memories and all this stuff. And obviously, you know, every time, it's one thing to think about this. It's one thing to present about the subject areas surrounding it. But the retelling of a story isn't like an emotional walk down that road again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and in research since then, I've come to find that the brain doesn't know the difference between a story and an actual event.
Oh.
You produce the same hormonal response, neuropeptide response, hearing a story as the person did during the actual event.
When it's your own story or someone else's story?
Someone else's story.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Depending on your level of empathy.
Right.
If you're in the moment and you care about them, there's a really good...
Right, you're putting yourself in their shoes.
Yes.
Oh,
your brain doesn't know the difference between hearing a story and the actual event happening to you. There's a really...
Which is why movies work.
Yeah, oh, exactly.
Why would you get scared in a thriller?
Exactly. It's an emotional roller coaster, and you feel it within your body. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that was the situation that you found yourself in.
Mm-hmm.
most of us, if we don't grow up in a medical family, and you had daughters who were entering that, but it sounds like your parents weren't.
No.
So if we, I know as someone who did grow up in a medical family, just how much you know that the average person doesn't. Because I would have all these situations where people wouldn't know something that I had just learned over the kitchen table.
Yep.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So you're in this, you're terrified. You don't have any medical background. Your family doesn't have medical background. And you're in a system that does not do a great job of really informing and empowering patients. We just fail on that level.
Absolutely.
And I think most people listening right now, if they've been in a severe medical situation, are aware that it takes a while to get the information you need to be an empowered, cooperative responder to that situation.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't do a bunch of due diligence on your own and you just listen to what is spoon-fed to you, the difference between what you're spoon-fed and what you can absorb and gain in knowledge is vast. It's a huge, vast difference. Tell people a little bit about sort of what you learned, and then let's start to go down how you learned it.
Okay. Well, as you mentioned, the American medical system falls short of combining everything that is available to us as a human being. We are, the American medical system is the best in the world at emergency care and triage, and it falls short in long-term care and employing the powers of the human body and incorporating it in the care. They actually refrain from teaching it and allowing it in their system. So we've been detached from it for years and counted on them as the white coat, all-knowing doctor. And for a long time, that was true. But there are many things that empower us from ancient cultures that we are now becoming more and more aware of. So the challenge is, you know, just like when you have your first child, you're lucky if you can learn ahead of them. You know, you struggle to stay ahead. Well, in an emergent pediatric environment, that is on, you know, hyperdrive.
Right.
And it's not provided by the hospital, social work, clergy. There's nobody that offers what we do have available to us. So I was left with my son in one arm and my smartphone in the other and researching, like from the very first event, what did we just do? What just happened? So everything that I've compiled is stuff that I've learned along the way in being by his side and being his caregiver.
Right. You mentioned earlier having a doctor come out of the hospital to talk to you privately and not like secretively, but just to sort of like come out to you and say, hey, you know, I want to thank you so much, because once you're out there in the real world and you're dealing with patients and you're dealing with treatment and outcomes and all of that, it sounds like the people on the ground, you know, they get it that, as he put it to you, 50% of success is based upon like the actual procedure and medication, and the other 50% will really be impacted by the energy in the room. Even if the doctor doesn't know about it, about like this four-step process that the self-awareness, self-regulation, build resiliency, success causes you to repeat those three sort of over and over again. You've read a lot of books, touched upon a lot of agreed upon research. This is like solid science. So for the people on this island and everywhere around the world who are going to listen to this on the web, what are some books written by certain authors that they can go to, especially someone who just got a cancer diagnosis yesterday? Give them a cheat sheet of some places they can go. And what might be what you would suggest they do within their own psyche to become as empowered as possible?
Okay, great. Well, one of the first things that happen, and I touched on, is that when you receive a diagnosis, which like you said, is normally a surprise, the first thing that happens is your spiritual stance gets rocked. Everything you know you believed in without a doubt changes immediately. And one of the first books I read was a book called The Future of God by Deepak Chopra.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a very good book in reflecting on what your actual visual image of God is, whether you call it the universe or God or whatever you call it. We use the term God because we're in the Western world and that's what we grew up with. And Oprah has an amazing part in the book because of her history with her uncle.
Mm-hmm.
And the guilt associated with what happened to her and her visual image of God being a bearded white man sitting on a cloud, listening to everything and all knowing, and will punish you to hell for something you do wrong.
Right.
So my beliefs got questioned and I was rocked to the core.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched a PBS special with Deepak Chopra talking about his book, and I ordered it and I read it and regained my hold on my belief system.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's important. And I mention it first because it's the first thing that happened to me. And it's really the first thing you should get a hold of before you try to navigate the medical world.
Mm-hmm.
And complementary medicines, complementary treatments like we offer at Mindful Presence. Because if you are in battle with your beliefs, then you'll never be coherent. You'll never have a strong stance on how you feel and what direction to go.
It's not following through on the decision that is the hardest thing to do. It's making the decision. I love how you said, get a grip on your belief system, I think is how you worded it, because for a person out there who is, you know, a absolutely committed atheist, that does not mean that you don't believe things.
Mm-hmm.
You believe what you believe.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go through an experience like this, you may have, you know, intruding thoughts of, well, if they're like that bargaining thing, well, if there is a God, then maybe I can actually bargain with him or her or it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So no matter who you are, when you're rocked to the core in this way, if you stay in a position of fractured fragility, then you're on shaky ground every step forward. But if you can do that inner work and solidify where you're standing,
mm-hmm.
that sets you up to make the best decisions going forward. That's what I'm hearing you say and what I personally am thinking is true.
Absolutely.
Okay,
absolutely.
So next, great. Oh, and let's repeat that. Deepak Chopra, of course, is amazing, but the specific book that helped you.
The Future of God.
The Future of God.
Right.
Okay.
And he refers to God as God 2.0. So take the original image that you had of God.
You thought you had, because you may not
exactly.
even have thought about it much.
Right, or given.
Mm-hmm.
And then how you now feel and what your true beliefs are. And then start from there to go forward. Mm-hmm.
Great.
And then, yeah. And then I became aware of, because of the original situation with McCoy, where mm-hmm. he needed some immediate emergent care, triage care.
Yeah, you didn't have much time there, did you?
No, we did not. And being in the moment and being with him, being present, led to me being asked to join him in the operating room mm-hmm. for two procedures that he could not be sedated for. And that...
Right, we won't go into the details.
Okay.
I just want people to understand his illness made it so that sedation effectively would kill him, and yet they could not move forward with treatment,
mm-hmm.
which was various forms of chemotherapy options,
mm-hmm.
until they were able to do a spinal tap.
Exactly.
And if you're getting a spinal tap and you move at the wrong moment,
mm-hmm.
you can actually potentially kill yourself.
Yeah, your body will go into shock.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so you were asked, within hours of even knowing anything was wrong, to find a way to help your four-year-old son not move
mm-hmm.
during a spinal tap, whereas medical wisdom, basically medical practice, says you always drug a person before you do that, just
yeah.
to make sure. So that's the situation.
Fully sedated.
Fully
yes.
sedated.
Mm-hmm.
And your son couldn't be sedated.
Could not be.
And
mm-hmm.
you had to figure out how to do this.
Yes. Yes.
You're as emotionally provoked as is humanly possible, because your child just is melting in front of you and could die in the next few moments. I mean, that's
right.
literally what you were going through.
Right.
What type of skills would a person want to start thinking about now, practicing now, so that if any emergency comes up to them in the future, they know what their body is doing, they can predict what's happening, and then they can potentially prevent it from causing problems and respond more effectively.
Well, like you'd mentioned, the self-awareness leads to self-regulation and builds resiliency. So self-awareness is learning how your body functions. And one of the first lectures that I saw on my phone while taking care of my son was Bruce Lipton standing on stage giving a 1-hour presentation of his book, Biology of Belief. And he talks about, and the main takeaway from that is that your perception of your environment dictates, regulates your blood chemistry.
Right.
Your blood chemistry dictates cellular function and gene expression. So how you perceive your environment will determine what your blood chemistry is, and then dominoes fall from there. You can either spiral up in a healthy way, or you can spiral down in a very unhealthy crash.
So you're on a train and you think you're going to a great vacation to see grandma. You're going to have one blood chemistry going on inside of you. You're on a train. You think that you're on your way to, you know, you're in Germany, you're on your way to Auschwitz. Mm-hmm. You have a completely different blood chemistry inside mm-hmm. your body. Mm-hmm. You're still sitting on a train moving across the earth, but your perception of what's going on and what's going to happen causes a chemical, hormonal, and then all the physical changes that go with those chemical hormonal releases.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. Optimal health is not available in a bad blood chemistry state. The only way to have an open receptive physiology is to understand that and have your perception of your environment be an empowered one, mm-hmm. where you are participating in your own survival and the function of your physiology. As I practice now, these years later, I'm constantly aware of my environment and what it's doing to my blood chemistry. It's called being mindful. Mm-hmm. And like Eckhart Tolle's book, The Power of Now, mm-hmm. says you are not your thoughts and emotions. You are your awareness of them.
Right.
So you're taking the seat of witness and you're being observant of the emotion in your body. And the first book I read about that was Bruce Lipton's book, The Biology of Belief.
Okay, so, and Bruce Lipton is easy to find online for people mm-hmm. who want to check out that book. My son has read it. It really changed his way of thinking about things at the age of 17. Mm-hmm. We know Bruce, and my son actually visited him in New Zealand and spent some time with him. And he came up here recently, which is where you and I met.
Yes.
And he, very, very amazing person, and being so generous to share everything forward that he's been blessed to be able to learn about.
Mm-hmm.
So the biology of belief.
Yes, and Bruce was actually brave enough to step forward and be the first major player to endorse our entire program. We have a major endorsement from Bruce Lipton that really helps us a lot.
Yeah, mm-hmm. absolutely. Mm-hmm. You sent that to me.
Yes, I did.
Yes, you did.
You have that.
Yeah, I know. So go Bruce. Mm-hmm. So my stepmother, who's a coach, you know, just a personal coach, mm-hmm. meaning like career coaching, life coaching, that type of thing. Mm-hmm. She's amazing. And one of the things that she'll oftentimes say is that emotions are there not because they are the truth. If you're scared of something, it doesn't mean that your emotion has now laid down this is a truth.
Mm-hmm.
The emotions are there to inform us mm-hmm. of either what we think is true or just to inform us of how we feel about something.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like you said, you know, to be aware, I think it was the other book that was talking about this, but Eckhart Tolle. Yeah, is it if your emotions are something that you go, oh, wow, look at that. What's that telling me? Like, I have friends who will say, oh, you know, I feel bad. I was talking to so-and-so on the phone, and then I said something that triggered her.
Mm-hmm.
And my girlfriend actually recently said this to me. I went, you didn't trigger her. She has little triggers around her in her life, and you stepped on one, but it's her trigger.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so to me, it's like when I get triggered, my immediate thought is, wow, why did that trigger me? What does that tell me about me?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's sort of what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah. And it really leads to a really good statement that Candace Pert put in her book, Molecules of Emotion,
okay,
which goes really into depth after the Bruce Lipton mm-hmm. Biology of Belief. And she says that your emotions are your autonomic nervous system's way, your body's way to unite, to make a united front towards a reaction. So when you feel an emotion in your body, it's the body's way of lining up all the cells to take a unified reaction to a life situation.
Because the emotion, if you think of someone who's not thinking at all, not analyzing what's going on, so you're saying that someone who feels excitement and joy and curiosity, they're going to go forward and go touch that, go look at that. They're going to actually, their whole body as a united group of cells will act upon that emotion. And yeah. If you feel fear, is it?
Yeah, like yeah. And mainly they're talking about the autonomic nervous systems, your automatic system of regulating your heart rate and your breathing rate and your response mechanism. It's our first part of our brain that developed. It's the most primal. It's called the reptilian brain.
Mm-hmm.
And it's allowed humans to survive for millions of years.
Right.
It's what makes the hair stand up on the back of your neck.
Right.
You know, if you were washing...
You don't think that. I think I want my hair to stand up right now.
Yeah. It's a mechanism in which it becomes aware of your surroundings in several different scientifically quantified ways, and quantum physics is one of them. But your autonomic nervous system is on full alert, scanning your environment for biofeedback.
At all times?
Biophotons at all times. When you're awake, when you're asleep.
Like? What exactly is it doing that's... How does your... Now, first of all, what is the autonomic nervous system?
Well, the autonomic nervous system is the automatic functions of the body. And like I said, it regulates your necessity to drink. It mm-hmm. you know, your mouth isn't dry because it has a lack of water in it. Your mouth is dry because your cells are dehydrated, and it triggers your mouth to become dry. So your conscious self will say, hey, I need a drink of water.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. It's a chemical set of dominoes that fall. It's a very complex system, and it happens automatically, and it happens subconsciously mm-hmm. underneath your conscious mind. So you can be thinking about many, many important things us humans have to think about.
Right.
It's monitoring your body and its surroundings at all times. And it does that through electromagnetic field from your heart and your brain. It does it, and it receives biophotons from every living thing. That's how humans communicate with plants, and plants communicate with humans, and animals, our pets as well. Wild animals know whether or not to be afraid of you
mm-hmm.
by the biophotons you emit and are carried on your electromagnetic field that comes from your heart.
So this is sort of like, I think in Japan right now, they've decided that they want school children to spend either it's an hour, probably an hour a week or something out. It's like becoming part of the curriculum that they need to spend. There's a term for it. Spend an hour. It's called a forest shower mm-hmm. maybe or something mm-hmm. like Benjamin Franklin used to take sun showers,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
right? Okay. And so, but it's because you go into that full forest and you
right.
are now, I guess, probably just encountering all of that energy that you were just talking about. And it has massive positive impacts on the body that's walking through that space.
Oh, yeah. That's a several hour lecture all on its own. Earthing is the term that's commonly used, this mm-hmm. new age earthing and grounding.
Right.
And we take negative ions from the earth, and that's what grounds us, our bare feet. There's actually science behind the fact that if you garden barefoot,
mm-hmm.
the soil communicates to the plants the nutrients that you lack, and it'll produce a higher amount of those nutrients to feed your body what it needs.
Wow.
Just like fungus communicates all tree roots together, It's there's like an internet underground.
Mycelium.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And so when you get out in nature.
And this is, I just want to say to people who are listening right now who this may be new, but we'll see if there's a book you can pull out of your memory that aligns to this. But it's this is accepted real science. This is not being debated or questioned out there. It's just so rarely spoken about.
Right.
But no, I've been aware of this for a few years. And there's, for example, the effect on your body if you sleep, you know, on the ground in direct contact compared to on the third floor of an apartment building in a bed.
Mm-hmm.
There's trackable, portable, recognizable changes in the body.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is, and I don't know for folks out there, but for me, if I do just sit down on the earth or to take a minute to lay down, especially on a sunny, not rainy, wet, cold day,
mm-hmm.
You know, you feel different if you're in the habit of paying attention to how you feel.
Yeah, yeah. And Candace Pert does talk about it in her book because when you are in nature, when you're grounded, you are in the right side of your brain, not the mm-hmm. left. You're in the creative flow state, and you're not in the left brain that's constantly chattering about the past and the future.
Mm-hmm.
And you put out molecules of emotion, as she named her book, that are feel-good, dopamine, oxytocin, serotonin. And
right.
We have access to that intentionally. We can, and again, the knowledge of that, raising your awareness of it, can focus your intent on grounding and receiving it.
Right.
So
another, like, here's a La Leche League. You've heard of that maybe.
Just heard of it.
So it's the organization mm-hmm. that promotes breastfeeding.
Mm-hmm.
Started by 7 Catholic women at a picnic back mm-hmm. in the 50s. And one of them had a doctor who was, you know, as a husband. And it was a world where women were being told formula is better,
mm-hmm.
right? Breast mm-hmm. milk is probably dirty or thin or not as good. And formula is king. And so anyways, it's now in 130 some odd countries. And it's huge. And one of the things that they just go out there and try to give basic knowledge and education to people.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing is that when a woman nurses her child, in the same way that we know there's certain things that will release those feel-good hormones, right? So when you nurse, the nursing itself releases in both the baby and in the mother those relaxing hormones. There's mm-hmm. several of them, mm-hmm. and I don't want to get them wrong, so I'm not going to state which ones mm-hmm. they are. But it's that's why children suck on a thumb when mm-hmm. they want to self-soothe. It's the same thing that happens when the nipple is rubbing against the roof of the mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And so it makes them feel better.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing happens when the child is nursing on the mother's nipple.
Mm-hmm.
That pressure releases these hormones, which essentially, basically, biologically want to get the mom to relax,
mm-hmm.
chill out, don't go anywhere because baby needs to hang for a while and get some nutrients.
Yeah.
And you might as well, you know, if you feel good, tired, a little sleepy, wonky, whatever, in a good way, you're mm-hmm. going to stick around longer. Baby gets more nutrients. Baby survives.
Oh, yeah.
So, but think about how many times the baby starts fussing and wants to nurse. And moms in our culture can sometimes think, oh, now I have to stop what I'm doing to sit down. And, oh, I wish the baby would just, you know, sleep another 20 minutes. I'm almost done with this or that. So we tend to sometimes see nursing as this inconvenience. And yet really, if you know what's going on, it's like, oh, I get to kick back and make myself feel really good for a few minutes and my baby will feel really good. And then I can get up and go back to what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
So just that sort of basic concrete knowledge empowers you to decide, do I want to sit down and have this incredible, positive, feel-good experience?
Mm-hmm.
And if you know that's what it's going to be, maybe you're more happy to go sit down and nurse.
Absolutely.
Then if you see, you know,
your awareness of it changes everything.
Yeah.
I had mentioned two of my older daughters that are in the medical field. My daughter Hallie, who was born at home by a midwife, is now just starting her career as a midwife. She's got her master's in women's health. And
nice.
One of the books that I read 30 years ago by a local author named Danny Heislin, Electrical Nutrition.
Mm-hmm.
He was actually raised, like you say, you talked at the dinner table because you were in a medical family.
Right.
He was raised in a farm situation where all this was just common knowledge, and he became a veterinarian and he wrote the book Electrical Nutrition. And he goes into great detail on the response between mother and child. And it was one of the very interesting things that helped my daughter get to where she is now.
Right.
And she is an expert. I mean, she really, she's taken the medical field with this holistic type background and combined the two together.
Mm-hmm.
And she's a very high success rate on,
right,
on deliveries. Yes.
Aww.
Keeping them out of C-section.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep. And it's empowerment. Being aware of what might happen. Can you prepare for it?
Mm-hmm.
And then employ the physiology that we have available to maintain a natural childbirth instead of going into a C-section.
Right.
An emergency section.
And can you avoid the various things that are done that make it more likely you'll end up with a C-section?
Exactly.
We don't need to go into all of that. That's
no.
A whole other show.
Mm-hmm.
But I was a La Leche League leader, and I had two home births, so you can imagine I sort of have my background in that.
Amen. That's beautiful.
Yeah. Okay, so let's see here. I want you to tell us a little bit about your tell us the name of your website. Tell us a little bit about your nonprofit, and explain what your goal is when you offer presentations.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Because of everything that we were put through and learned along mm-hmm. the way, we started a nonprofit called Mindful Presence, and it's spelled like gifts. And our our catchphrase is that we're bringing the gift of mindfulness to pediatric patients, families, and care providers. We enter the hospital as stress relief because mm-hmm. stress is like the number one cause. 90% of all doctor's visits are stress related. Stress leads to...
And doctors know this.
Oh, yes. It's undeniable. That's why I can approach the scientist in every doctor with science. You can't approach the medical system with woohoo. You have to have science to get you in the door.
And
what we do.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So our goal is to be funded by private and corporate donors. And everything I do now is voluntary. We want to provide this care and training to pediatric patients, families, and care providers at no cost.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no real argument to it.
So you want to be able to provide it free to the people who need it.
Exactly. In the hour of need.
So you're looking mm-hmm. for your funding to not come from people who
yes.
are suddenly in a horribly stressful situation.
No, it's the last thing they need to worry about is an extra dollar.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we have an amazing group of officers of the corporation. My oldest daughter, Heidi, who wasn't one of the two in the medical field, but she is a clinical hypnotherapist and mm-hmm. a death doula.
Okay.
And she is a very, very powerful energy worker, and she's amazing at pulling people together to get things done. My friend Bonnie is a partner, a vice president and co-founder of Mindful Presence, and she does energy work, licensed massage therapist, and she is amazingly networked in our community as well. And we also have a PhD neurologist, Eileen Ruhoy, who up until February of last year was a faculty neurologist at Children's Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And she became aware of our story and has jumped on board. And she's vice president and medical director of our nonprofit. Mm-hmm. So we have some alphabet behind our names.
Right. And you have all of the people who have worked with her,
yeah.
who trust her,
mm-hmm.
you know, who have already emotional relationships of trust, and they respect her.
Mm-hmm.
And so then it probably makes it easier for them, because doctors are humans like the rest of us. Doctors live in this medical world like the rest mm-hmm. of us. And doctors can have clouded views and need some illumination like the rest of us.
Mm-hmm.
So do you feel that it makes it easier for you to connect with people because of this diversity of the people on your board?
Yes, definitely. And she has complete buy-in emotionally and scientifically, and her name carries a lot of clout
mm-hmm.
in the medical industry. But yet we still have an uphill battle mm-hmm. bringing this complementary practice into the medical, like into the hospital.
But you're currently, where is it that you're working with some transplant patients yes. right now?
Yeah, there's a place when my son needed a kidney transplant. We were
right.
we had lived at the Ronald McDonald House for 3.5 years while he was being treated at the hospital. And when he qualified for a kidney transplant after 27 months of dialysis, mm-hmm. they moved us from the Ronald McDonald House to a private apartment in the Allegro apartment building in Seattle. Mm-hmm. And it's called, the nonprofit is called the Transplant House, and they have 50 units. So people from all over the world come to Seattle for hard, solid organ transplants.
Mm-hmm. You said and like double lung transplants, yeah, yeah. everything.
I'm working with 4 patients right now who 2 of them have had heart transplants and two of them have had full lung transplants.
Right. Mm-hmm. So you are working with people right now.
Yes, I do. Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But this is just out of the goodness of your heart or you receive compensation? I'm just curious.
No, I just do it on my own time. I mean, it's the mission I want to do.
Right
now, when we lived at the transplant house, I had been jobless for 3.5 years
right.
and been full-time caregiver for my son who still requires full-time caregiving when he's not in school.
Mm-hmm.
So being from the boatyard background, I can fix a lot of things and I'm working in maintenance in the apartment. So right now I'll prep and paint apartments and they trade me for an apartment to live in and enough money to sustain myself. Month to month, barely.
Right.
And then I spend, I work about.
So you're already physically there.
Yeah, I'm physically okay. there. And I often run into people while I'm carrying my tool bag. Mm-hmm. And I'm like the last patient that I met was a young lady who had both her lungs transplanted and she had family there in the room and their smoke alarm went out. And I was called in to do the smoke alarm and a conversation started and now we work together. I've right. taught her controlled breathing and how to, you know, get in touch with her heart. And
I want to know what it is that you feel was the most, maybe the first primary, most important tool that the breathing piece and whatnot. Describe that a little bit because you've brought that up multiple times.
Mm-hmm.
And then other than that, I think we're just going to have to direct people to your website
mm-hmm.
because obviously every person out there who's dealing with anything, whether it's a medical issue or it can be career issues, it can be relationship at home issues, it can be the loss of a mm-hmm. loved one and they're now gone and you're still dealing with that. That's sort of in a way the beauty of the work you're doing is that this is applicable to every situation.
Yes, it is. There is no life situation that doesn't, like the picture I gave you of the circle of books that I have.
Mm-hmm.
There isn't a life situation that doesn't follow that path. I work with a healthcare or a mental health provider and asked her in her years and years and clients, has any situation not been applicable to this circle of education.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, no, we all follow that. And one of the terms that you'll see on my website is coherence.
Yeah.
And
it's
a term that HeartMath uses, HeartMath Institute out of Boulder Creek, California, founded by Doc Childrey. And they have 26 years in the field and they use a device called an M-wave. And it connects to your ear or your finger and it picks up your heart rate variance. Because if you have a heart rate of 80,
mm-hmm.
it's not consistent. It'll go up to 90 and down to 70. It has a sine wave swing to it when your mm-hmm. autonomic nervous system is in balance, that is. It'll swing between 90 and 70 or whatever yours
when
might be.
When you are
in
good
balance. Yes.
Okay.
The medical term is homeostasis.
Mm-hmm.
When your autonomic nervous system is in homeostasis, your body is in balance. You're resting and digesting and producing all the hormones you need to thrive.
There's no triggers out there that the
no
body
triggers.
Is alarming to,
exactly.
so to speak. Okay.
And so HeartMath uses the term coherence when your heart and mind are connected to each other. And we talked about the vagal nerves.
Yes.
The vagal nerves communicate between the brain and all the organs in the body, but there's actually 6 times more information going from the heart to the brain, ascending information, than there is descending information. Your heart is the first reactive part of your body to any outside stimuli. Your spirit and your autonomic nervous system use your heart to read outside influences and send the signal to your to the rest of your body. The heart actually triggers the brain and body in 5 different ways.
Right.
And
well, it makes sense because mm-hmm. your heart is, if something needs to happen, mm-hmm. and if the body needs to chemically, electrically, hormonally respond and say, hey, to the rest of the body, we need you to do something, mm-hmm. it is, sounds like the heart obviously will move the blood, which mm-hmm. would transport those physical carriers of message. Mm-hmm. So you need the heart to be on board early with pump faster or pump slower. Mm-hmm. You know, I think there's times where actually not pumping as much is the better option. Mm-hmm. So that makes sense. But what you're saying is that also neurologically, the heart through the vagus nerves is like when it receives, you know, some information, it's a conduit to other parts of the body to receive that information. Is that what you're saying?
It's the first.
The primary,
yes. Okay. So besides neurologically, you mentioned the biophysical part where it's the speed and pressure of the beat.
Yeah.
The pressure from your heart actually dictates thyroid function and many other functions of the body. So it signals it biophysically. It signals to your body with biochemistry. It's mm-hmm. part of the endocrine system. It produces more oxytocin than any other, your brain or any other gland in your body, any other node. And it communicates through biochemically. It also communicates electromagnetically. It has a field that can be measured, and it's 5,000 times more powerful than that of the brain.
So I think there is a tendency in our culture to actually prefer to be in a position of powerless victim, mm-hmm. because then it becomes someone else's responsibility to solve the problem. Mm-hmm. For example, someone who has high blood pressure issues, pretty much every doctor out there will tell you that when they talk to their patients with high blood pressure, they'll say, here are the ways in which you can actually take control of this. You know, you can meditation, whatever it is. But a lot of times they run into the patient who doesn't want to actually take on that ownership and instead is like, can't you just give me a pill?
Oh, absolutely. And we've been trained as a society to take a pill.
Right. And when mm-hmm. you ask for that pill, it's like you're basically saying, can't the solution come from outside of me? Mm-hmm. Because then you have less responsibility. Mm-hmm. You can't potentially fail and you don't have to work so hard. You pop a pill, someone else is supposed to now solve it, and you can continue with your habit of behaviors, which are actually causing the problem.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you're saying,
well,
it can be the other way around.
It is the other way around. And our society, how many times have you heard your parents or anybody say, you better think about that before you do it? Mm-hmm. And they tell us to go to our brain. When really the power and the intuition comes from our heart. Is your heart in it? Do you know it by heart? Mm-hmm. Those are terms that are in our society for a reason. And in most ancient cultures and existing cultures, they know to go to the heart. Almost every culture has, even Western, has a manner of putting your hands to your heart, mm-hmm. where your attention goes, your energy flows. And so one of the things we do is put our hand to our heart. Like, this is the international sign for I love you. Mm-hmm. And I do it to myself. Mm-hmm. I give myself love and I ground in my abdomen and it sets up a circuit and it puts me in my body. Most meditations have a way of making you aware of your surroundings and then bringing you into your body. And it shuts down the chatter of your left side of your brain, your left mm-hmm. hemisphere, the monkey mind. Mm-hmm. And once you become in your body and shut that down, then you can go into your meditative state or your heart control state or whatever you do. But that's one of the exercises we do to get into your body and start to harness the power of your own physiology.
And in a more traditional, natural, holistic way of being on the planet, which our species up until maybe around 10,000 years ago spent most of our time, the way most of the other animals on the planet spend their time, is it seems that it's a fairly non-chaotic existence. Mm-hmm. And there's sort of like, it's almost like a life of meditation. If you look at most animals out there, except when they're being chased by a predator or except when something, the rare, strange thing is happening. Otherwise, the horses just spend all day walking through the paddock and the field eating grass. You know, it's like it's even keel. And yet this modern society we live in basically is screaming at you, be spastic constantly. And so it makes a lot of sense for us to say, if we actually do that, it's not going to be healthy. So can we find a balance of intentionally bringing our body back to that state of, what did you call it earlier? Rest and digest. There you go. Rest. So we need to be there. And then we say, okay, now I can pop up and go engage in this sort of chaotic world and be effective and be in my left brain and be monkey chatter. But then, okay, now guess what? I'm going to go rest and digest.
Right.
And yet we forget to do that.
Right. And a key difference to understand is that the art of meditation, the practice of meditation, is to close yourself in a room for 20 minutes or an hour and try to cure what's happened to you in the other 23 hours of the day. Okay, we go out in a hectic life and we try to solve it. And they say you need to meditate for 20 minutes a day. Unless you don't have time, then you need to meditate for an hour. So mindfulness, on the other hand, which we teach, is being mindful throughout your day. Taking yourself out of the autopilot that we get ourselves into and being a mindful driver, a mindful eater. There's mindfulness to everything we can do. And
yet you don't feel like that's being neurotically left mind in super control of everything.
Exactly.
It's not that.
It's not that. It's the opposite of that. Being mindful doesn't eliminate the chaos in your life. It increases your ability to cope. And when you increase your ability to cope, when you become aware of your blood chemistry, you're more aware when it starts to change. And you have a lot better chance of curbing it when you first notice it and then employ the techniques to curb it than you do if you're on autopilot and you're just sitting there with anxiety and you're getting wound up and gritting your teeth and you don't even notice it.
Right.
And then it's flooding your body. You're flooded. And then you don't have the capacity to be rational and feel with your heart and think with your head. So mindfulness is the ability to employ all of it together. It's not going out of your mind just to go by your heart. You know, they say go by your heart, but take your brain with you. Right. So that's what it's all about.
I would say it's the person who is watching the news of the day on the television and instantly gets tense and then grips the edge of their chair. And the next thing you know, they stand up and they're shouting at the screen and their relaxing evening is completely gone and replaced by this reaction to what's really is horrible in some ways, what's going on in the world.
Right.
And that's the result of lack of mindfulness. And another person can watch the same content and start to feel the tension, but then be like, oh, well, do I want to put my body through the distress and the damage caused by going into that? Or do I want to find a way to stay healthy and calm in spite of that information coming off that screen?
Right.
Your reaction won't change the information on the screen, but it'll make or break your evening.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you think of fight or flight versus rest and digest, and if you're watching the news and it triggers your sympathetic nervous system into fight or flight, there couldn't be a worse time to eat your dinner. And if you think of the 50s and the 60s.
Oh, that's a great point.
Yeah. If you think of the 50s and 60s and all the shows, they're TV trays, TV dinners.
Right.
You were coached to eat your dinner in front of the TV news. Walter Cronkite, think of the images of Vietnam and all everything right. that's shown on the news, and the kids are sitting there
being told to be quiet because mommy and daddy are listening to the news while they're all sitting there.
And digest your
food
so yeah. you can be healthy. It's yeah. an impossibility.
Yeah.
So this is the very opposite of that. Yes.
So, mm-hmm. okay. So, everybody, the show is going to air. And that's great for everyone who gets 101.9 FM and is available and not at work or doing any other dozen of things they could be doing. But for a lot of people, you just can't catch it on the air. So you can go to voiceofvashon.org. And when you get to the main page, you click on the tab that says shows. And then under there, you're going to see Prose, Poetry, and Purpose and Focus On. And you go to there and you can listen 24/7, or you can go to my personal website, which is marchtwisdale.com. And what's cool is that there we will have a nice write-up, and it will list off some of the books and the authors, and also they can find your website, which is, again, the name of your website is?
Mindfulpresence.org.
Now that's presence as in a Christmas present.
Yes.
With an S at the end.
T-S at the end.
All right.
Instead
okay, cool.
of C-E-S.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, yep. great. And thank you just so much for reminding all of us that we have tools at our disposal. We have capacity that is untapped. We have abilities like superheroes if we just reach out and look for them.
They're there. And I appreciate the opportunity to spread the word and to serve. Thank you, March.
Yeah, it's been my pleasure.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Fonzie! D.Y. Sabes que ya llevo un rato mirándote. Tengo que bailar contigo hoy. Chihuá. Vi que tu mirada ya estaba llamándome. Muéstrame el camino que yo voy.